Everybody, back again with another episode of our podcast, Red, White, and Brown from Daisies.live. Antara, how was your weekend? What's going on?
It was a busy weekend for everyone. I don't know like how many of you bought on the Barbieheimer train.
Everybody did.
Everybody did. So, yeah.
The whole world did, by the way. Apparently, Oppenheimer made more money in India than Barbie did. And elsewhere in the world, Barbie made more money than Oppenheimer did. But what a weekend. I think the last 2 weeks, I've literally gone to theaters and really enjoyed myself, because right after Mission Impossible, these two were the bigger movies of the year. And we're going to cover, of course, Barbie and Oppenheimer, but we're also going to cover another movie called Boval, which is in Prime Video, and a movie and the series, which is the trial, a remake of the American series, The Good Wife, the Indian remake of that series. I'm going to talk a lot more about that. But coming back to, let's start with Barbie.
Oh my God, this was actually so much fun watching it, because I know there are some people who are like, oh, the feminist agenda and all that. But you know what? This is how you present a movie with a feminist agenda. You make it fun, not preachy, but, you know, just like go with like real world examples and how. So the funny thing is, it's always fun to watch a movie where, you know, you see your society from the lens of someone who is not part of that society, who's coming from somewhere where they're living in a slightly
where the world is plastic.
where the world is plastic, it's slightly idealistic. And when they see and comment on certain things, and then people can see their hypocrisy of things. So, I mean, for an Indian audience, a very like recent example would be PK, where this alien comes to Earth and he's unable to understand like the ways of the Earth. Like, why are people like this? This is not how people are on my planet. They don't lie. They don't cheat. And similar thing happened to Barbie and Ken. Like, you know, they enter the real world and they see everything like that is problematic with the society. Like, you know, they get catcalled, they get hoots, and it was
Ken learns of a concept called patriarchy, which he didn't learn earlier. Yeah. But I have to tell you, I think a lot of people when they think of the movie Barbie, they want to take the kids to the movie because obviously the doll, you know, the Mattel doll we're talking about. But this movie actually is a PG-13. It is not for kids below 13. And I'll tell you why, because it's a very cleverly written movie. This movie could have been Life of Barbie in Barbie Land and, you know, the culture and, you know, the fun that Barbie has and the parties in pink and everything that Barbie stands for. But this movie is so cleverly written that it really hits home on a lot of subjects, and it's definitely not a movie for kids, though it talks about the doll. Now, this movie, of course, there's a huge history to the doll and the inspirations. In later years, the doll became, I mean, it was a president, it was a lawyer, it was a cancer curer, it was a physicist. The doll got a lot of, occupations. So there were so many Barbies who were really forward looking. And there were so many Kens, different kind of Kens. There was a black Ken, there was an Asian Ken. There are all kinds of Kens. So what this movie really does is it's set in Barbie land. And of course, there's a self-proclaimed stereotypical Barbie played by Margot Robbie. She looks like Barbie. She looks so good. And there are other Barbies, and they all live in this peaceful paradise where she wakes up and she gets dropped into her car and the coffee doesn't have coffee. And, you know, it's just like the toy world. And she's literally doing nothing with leisure. And the counterparts, the Kens, do nothing except, as Ken says, a beach. So he beaches. And then they're only platonic companions for Barbies whenever Barbies want them to be around. Otherwise, they have absolutely zero romantic interest in the Kens. And I mean, I think those scenes are really clever. The humor is amazing. And there's so much nostalgia because as kids, if you remember playing with the Barbie, you know, Barbies never use stairs. They pretend to drink liquids. And, you know, they say, hi, Barbie, to every other doll. So everybody in Barbieland is hi, Barbie and hi, Ken. There is, of course, Alan. And there is, you know, the sister, I'm forgetting her name. So who gets pregnant, the pregnant doll, right? So the stereotypical Barbie has blissful naivety. And one morning she starts developing self-awareness and anxiety, which is big for Barbie because Barbie never gets these feelings. And she has thoughts of death. And then she wants to really cure herself. So she goes to the renegade Barbie, and the renegade Barbie says it's because you're being not well by some kid in the real world. Mm-hmm. So let's go fix this. And then she makes her way. So, you know, she figures out how to go to the real world, and, you know, that, and somehow Ken is like, I can't live without you. I want to go with you. So he gets into the backseat of a car, and then they drive, and then they have to surf, and then they have to ride it. I mean, they go over the process, and finally they reach Los Angeles, where the Mattel headquarters, and this Will Ferrell, the owner of Mattel. And oh my God, it is so funny. And she gets into this place, and now they realize that a Barbie has escaped Barbie land, and we need to find her and send her back. Otherwise, there'll be a huge implosion because Barbies don't know what the real world is. And if this Barbie picks up stuff from the real world, the entire Barbie land is going to get destroyed. So it is so funny. It is so funny. So she comes to LA, and then she realizes that things aren't simple. And she meets the person who's torturing her doll, and it was a Mattel employee played by America Ferrera, by the way, and her daughter Sasha, played by Ariana Greenblatt. And the shift focus, and she realizes there was the childhood trauma and these whatever the childhood trauma Glory and Sasha have, and they're at fault for Barbie's weird behavior, and they try to help the doll achieve stability for herself and her community. And in doing so, the audience is privy to a very moving exploration of what it means to grow up as a woman from the perspective of both mother and daughter. The movie's also very upfront about the struggles that women face, giving voice to certain exasperation, frustration. And, you know, it might seem, it goes deeper into issues. It takes stereotypical Barbie's life and then compares it with real women's life and how Barbie has changed. But what happens during this entire trip to LA is the fact that Ken gets exposed to something like patriarchy. And by the time Barbie and Gloria and Sasha get back, Ken has completely changed Barbie land into Ken land. And there are pictures of horses everywhere, and he's literally, you know, they've got beer cans and things are messy, and he's completely changed.
Yeah, that was like so funny for me, because you know what I was
so funny. It was so funny. I mean, I absolutely loved the entire depiction of how women run the place and how women, men run it. And then, you know, the Barbies get together, and somehow they have smarts, and they use their smarts to pass their own constitution and make sure that Ken's entire intention is of patriarchy, ruling by patriarchy, is taken away. So I thought it was very, very smart writing. I mean, when I thought Barbie as a movie, I thought it'd be a brainless movie, but it's definitely not.
Smart movie. It's a smart movie, and it is fun. And the actors are like, the cast is definitely...
Oh, amazing.
The cast is what like takes the cake. Like, you know,
I love with Ryan Gosling and his depiction of Ken, because, you know, even his washboard abs are kind of, they feel like somebody's painted them all. It's like somebody photoshopped the guy in, but he's so good as Ken. And so is Margot Robbie. I mean, all the actors were just immensely so good. But I think at the core of it, Barbie, and you know, a lot of people came to, when I watched Barbie, was last Thursday, but like first day, first show, even before it got released in the theaters. And a lot of people turned up wearing pink, and as a tribute to Barbie, people literally dressed up in pink clothes to come watch it. And it's like a celebration, and people in the theater were like, happy Barbie Day when they started watching. And I thought everybody really, really, really enjoyed it. And the music was like bubblegum perfect. Loved the music, and there was some dances. You know, it was just such a perfect movie. But also, I think it was a very smartly written tribute to womanhood, and it was really well done.
I actually enjoyed the vibe. Like you're saying that, and people were saying the same thing. Like after Avengers Endgame, this is like the movie that people were so excited about to go in the theaters that they actually dressed up for the movie. And like, you know, it's kind of like takes away from, like I said, like for so long with like COVID in between and everything, like we kind of lost in touch with like the joys of life, like, you know, those little things, like, you know, dressing up for a movie, being excited for something, going to a theater, like, you know, and this brought the joy back, and I'm happy.
And you know, there's a whole generation of moviegoers now who are older, but everybody's played with Barbie. When was the first Barbie doll released? It was 1950s, right? So you can imagine generations upon generations of people who have played Barbie, and everybody turned up dressed. It was so amazing to watch so many people come and watch the movie in pink clothes. It wasn't like, it's like, oh, Barbie's really caught on. It does. So Barbie is playing in theaters. Definitely, we have to remind you, go watch. Absolutely. We have to remind you, it's not a movie for kids. The doll is for the kids. The movie, definitely not with a lot of, it has swear words. It has, you know, references to genitals, all those things. It's definitely not meant for kids. All right, next on, Antara, Oppenheimer?
Yes.
What do you say?
Okay, this was a heavy one. You know, I generally like prefer to watch Nolan movies like from the comfort of my couch where I can be cerebral and not in the theaters where I'm distracted by things. But even with all that and the Barbie fever, I can tell that this is a wonderfully made film, and I enjoyed the whole storytelling process, which is Nolan's, like, you know, remarkable feature. Like, he always makes it, the storytelling is so engaging that you're always left like, you know, what's happening? Like, you know, it's like, I'm thinking like, look, is there a layer behind it? Like, is there something coming? Is something coming? Like, you know, that was amazing. So of course,
even though the movie is almost 3 hours long, you do not feel the length because it's so immersive. I mean, you literally don't want to let it go. Definitely not.
And you have to, you know, keep track of things. Like that's the one of the things with Nolan. Like you have to keep, you cannot just forget like what happened in the first hour and by the third hour, because it all connects back and everything's there. So yeah, it was mental exercise watching Barbie and Oppenheimer, both the movies.
Same weekend. No, this movie, the script of the movie was actually adapted from a Pulitzer-winning biography of Oppenheimer called The American Prometheus. And it is written by Kai Bird and Martin Sherwin. And it is so amazing that he ties it back to the book by the opening few minutes of Oppenheimer's is, you know, the entire myth of the legend of Prometheus, who's the person who stole fire from the gods and gave it to humanity, right? And then he suffered terrible consequences because of that. So that entire thing is revived, and it's then linked back to the entire story of how Oppenheimer created the atom bomb and how he regretted it. So it's so beautifully woven in that way.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a story that you're watching because you don't know what's coming, because you know what's coming. This is history. We have seen this. We know what's coming. We know how Oppenheimer felt about what how they used their invention. But we also know that, you know, at some point in time, he had to make that sacrifice over, like, you know, morals, over, you know, there's a tussle going on in his head, like, you know, if I should continue, like, you know, what does your morality say versus what is patriotism telling you and what are people telling you? Like, there are so many different perspectives of people. There are so many different ambitions. Like, you know, some people are ambitious for their career, for other things, and so many different ideologies and so many different wants, and everything is coming to a clash.
But also, I think it also touches upon very delicately on the politics within the American institutions, whether it's academic or it's government institutions, how the politics is so layered that somebody who's brilliant, like Oppenheimer, by the way, played by Cillian Murphy, is so phenomenal as Oppenheimer. Okay. You feel him, you really feel him. And how, you know, he starts at Princeton, and how he launches the Manhattan Project, and, you know, he gave the world its first nuclear weapon. And along the way, you know, his personal life, along with, you know, a DC guy called Lewis Strauss, played by Robert Downey Jr. And then, of course, his interaction with Matt Damon, who plays Leslie Groves, who is in charge of the American Army, actually works on the Manhattan Project. But it kind of weaves his entire life story from the time that he was a student in Europe, and then ties it back to the security hearings that challenged his reputation in the 1950s, where they said, oh, you had ties to communists because your wife gave money to communists, or your wife had believed in communism at some point in time, and how they really tied back to his reputation and almost killed his reputation. Now, I love the way how the story is non-linear, because it really tells the story very well, how his equation with Einstein was around, how Einstein warned him, whatever you're going to do, you know, I know you're doing it for science, but at some point in time, you will get the morality aspect of it. And Einstein really stayed out of it. You know, he sees the world differently. And Nolan brought out Oppenheimer's worldview so beautifully. So beautiful. He sees it. He doesn't see grays. He sees it in right and wrong. And his moral fiber was really, really, really strong. And the script really, poof, what a brilliant script this was. And Nolan has this tendency to pick up just the right key elements from Oppenheimer's life and weave that into a story, because he didn't need to tell a lot, but he told the most important ones, which kind of gives you an idea of how this man was, and gives you a background of his entire journey into this invention, and how other collaborators were a part of this, how he actually took the entire team to New Mexico and they built an entire city in New Mexico to actually do this and test it. And then, of course, Cillian Murphy is amazing, but his Oppenheimer is brilliant at times. He shows his brilliance as an actor in the world. It just hits you. It hits you different. And of course, you see him turn from a young man who's eager for knowledge to, you know, his own, the peak of his career, where he's proud of what he's achieved and he trusts his magic. And then down to where he starts distrusting people around him and distrusting his own self. He just starts distrusting his own work. And I think even Robert Downey Jr., who plays Lewis Strauss, who actually is the guy who frames, he pretends to be this guy's friend, Oppenheimer's friend, but then actually frames Oppenheimer, just because he can't have Oppenheimer be very popular. I thought Robert Downey Jr. as, it's probably one of his best works that I've seen.
It was like at first he was unrecognizable for me. Yeah.
I was like, isn't this the same guy, the makeup, every damn thing? He was It just didn't look like Robert Downey Jr. It didn't look like Iron Man, I swear.
Yeah. Because, you know, Cillian Murphy is still looking like Cillian Murphy. But no, like, you know, a movie is only as good, like, you know, as your protagonist and antagonist are. Like, you have to keep the sides engaged from both ends. So, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, he didn't, the flaws to his character, he was immensely selfish. He was also, you know, he knew which side of the bread was buttered and he stuck to it, you know. He did not want to go with that woman he had an affair with, but he went back to her, you know, in the middle. And so all of these things become a very, but his relationship with his wife, played by the way, Emily Blunt, was very, you know, empowering for him because she always pushed him to be the best version of himself. She actually was quite a support. But you know, the director's lens is almost non-judgmental, because imagine a woman who has a kid and decides that she didn't want to be with the kid. She gives away the kid to somebody else for a bit because she can't handle it. That could have been judged very differently given the era the movie came from. But the movie just doesn't go there. The movie sticks to the facts. The movie sticks to the story. The movie sticks to her. It looks at her character, and then it takes whatever's positive of her character into his life. And the focus and the lens of the movie remains there. He almost creates some, you know, there's a mythic quality to his Oppenheimer, and he develops it even though he shows how selfish and, you know, how fickle-minded he was at times, but he actually shows the growth in the character in a very amazing way. And these 3 hours are so worth. It is indeed a masterpiece. Again, another Nolan masterpiece.
Another thumbs up.
Another thumbs up. It's a
This is a summer of blockbusters for sure. Like, you know,
absolutely. This is a summer of Barbie, Oppenheimer, Mission Impossible, all three movies. You cannot watch them at home. You have to watch them in theaters. These are movies meant for theaters. And another thumbs up. Please go watch. All right. Next on. The Indian version of Good Wife. The trial. Kajol's trial. Let's talk about it. What do you feel?
Why don't you get started and then I'll join you?
So,
because I didn't get to finish it
completely. I'm one of those, I have to tell you, I'm one of those people who watched all seasons of Kajol's, you know, the original Alicia Florrick, The Good Wife. It was, of course, conceived by Michelle and Robert King, and then it was produced by several people during the course of its 7 seasons. And each season had around 22, 23 episodes. And each of these episodes were 45, 50 minutes long. So this was epic. This series is epic proportion. And as you watched Juliana Margulies, Alicia Florrick, go from getting to know about her husband's transgression, where her husband, who's a district attorney, gets implicated for sexual crimes and sexual favors and goes to jail, and how her world falls apart and she's got 2 kids. From that time and growth of her character, where at one point in time she's been a housewife for so long that she's completely lost herself. But then she gets around to looking for a job, how she gets kicked for looking a job, how people speak about her, everything she does becomes national news. And how she really picks up the gears as her, you know, somebody that she used to like in college helps her, Will Gardner, Josh Johns was just so good looking. And how he actually gives her a job, but she has to start as a junior after so many years. So she starts as a junior and makes her way up in the law firm. So I remember watching all the 7 seasons. And then by the time the 7 seasons were over, the very next year, they took one of the characters from this show, Good Wife, the woman lawyer, the partner who's woman, played by Sheba Chandra in the Indian version. And they created an entire series based on that character, Christine Brzezinski's character, called The Good Fight. And again, Good Fight was another amazingly well-written series, because the series starts with the day Trump wins and Hillary loses. And this woman, Christine Brzezinski's character, is actually married to somebody in Trump's cabinet. Her husband works for Trump. And she's a lawyer working in a black firm in Chicago, literally. Oh, hilariously written, amazingly beautifully political, but amazingly and smartly written series. Now you take that, this entire, you know, chain of series and the characters that were developed, and the characters are so beautifully developed. I swear to God, every time I'd watch, sit and binge watch, I'd open a bottle of wine along with Alicia's character and literally drink it with her because you so loved those characters. Then you see the trial, and
I felt like it was lacking, but for you it must be.
It was so heartbreakingly bad because Kajol deserves better. That's one. Jishu Chatterjee is his name, another actor. He deserves so much better. Alai Khan deserves so much better. Shiva Chadda deserves so much better. In 8 episodes, number one, you couldn't drive the woman. Her name is Nayanika Sengupta in the series. You can't drive her character well. You can't drive the politics behind her husband's crimes. The crime is not properly defined. You can define what the children are going through. You can define the mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship with the mother-in-law. Feels like the daughter-in-law is letting her son down. And honestly, you know, if you watch the originals, this feels like a joke because, number one, why the hell is it called Pyar Kanoon Dokha? What do you mean? Pyar Kanoon Dokha? I have no idea. Why would you give it a subtitle in the first place? It's a trial. It's a trial. Let it be. Why Pyar Kanoon Dokha?
Because they have to, like, you know, they have to make it different from, like you said, the names cannot be the same. It might be that.
Probably so, they have to.
They made it like, yeah.
They made it like that to get over.
Yeah.
But very weirdly, you know, there's 8 episodes, neither do they define Nornika's character, and they don't give a time to really set the story in terms of the person that we got to empathize with is her in the story, right?
Yeah.
But we don't get enough time to empathize with her at all because we don't get to bond with her at all because she's one moment, you know, she hears that her husband's arrested and and she slaps him, and the next moment she's walking out with him to the press and supporting him, and there's no in between, literally. So she goes from a slap to clap in like a matter of seconds, a blink of an eye, and like, what the hell, where are her emotions? You almost don't even like her to that extent. Then, of course, in the original, there was Archie Punjabi played Kalindi Sharma, who is the private investigator in the show, and the private investigator becomes her close friend, and she's the one who actually gets the husband the bail. But in the original, she's supposed to also have had an illicit relationship with the husband. But in the original, there was a son and a daughter, and that brings a lot of layering. Because the way the son reacts, the way the daughter reacts are very different. That brings a lot of layering to Alicia Florek's character. In this one, there are two daughters. And those two daughters watch all the pictures and videos of the father having sex with somebody, and literally there's no horror on their faces. They literally, the feelings towards a father don't change at all. They literally...
I was like really surprised with, like, see, every character came off like they came across as cold. Their reactions were not believable. For me, it becomes very difficult. Like,
collapsed. And if you watch the original and you know the original story, this feels like a joke. And I think a lot of American audiences would feel that if you watch the originals. Again, you know, the character that Jishu Sengupta plays, Rajiv Narnika's husband, was actually originally played by Chris North. Remember? Sex, Lies, and that guy. He's so good looking. He's so affable. Yes. You almost know that he's got women after him. You also know where his charisma comes from. You also know he's set up for politics because of the way he looks. all of that is entirely missing here, the entire charisma. The guy who actually creates his career, political career, was played by the guy's called Eli Gold. And there's this entire layering of the guy being Jewish and, you know, like bringing in the Jewish money and bringing in the Jewish support and taking him to politics. And that kind of carries through even through The Good Fight. That guy carries his character all the way. It is such a strong character. Over here, it's played by Aseem Hatangade, and I swear to God, the character literally has no legs because you don't really get to define the character.
So I think the problem that The Trial suffers is, which a lot of adaptations suffer, like, you know, because that, especially from, like, if you compare it to, like, the original screenplay, even the original screenplay that Indian people, like Indian writers write versus something that they adapt, to choose to adapt. So I feel like they are really afraid to change elements in the story to make it more local and, you know, make it basically make it more relatable to the Indian audience. But rather than they're like, oh, this is something we already have ready made. This was a hit. Why don't we get that? And I think another thing that does not work in our favor is it does not matter. Like, you know, when I've seen that over here, if somebody's writing a script, even if the show is going to get canceled after 2 seasons, but the amount of work that the screenplay writers, the script writers, they put in each and every character because they feel like it's their baby. So they will not get shy of, like, you know, characterizing it perfectly, giving it a proper background. Like, every character is a round character. It comes with a background. It comes with a motive, and you understand where they're coming from. Nothing is like thought at the last moment, but I feel like when they do that adaptation in India, and they are like, they are probably not sure they'll get renewed for a second season. Will the actors be available? Kya kare aisa? Matlab apna dimag nahi lagana hai, to let's pick up.
Pick and choose. What I felt was they've just picked and chosen parts of this and kind of just changed names and kept the story the same, which doesn't work because, number one, it's a web series. Number two, you have to adapt it to, you know, whatever conditions there are. It's too... Also, I felt that, you know, looking at Kajol and the way she was... the entire thing was woven was in a way that I felt that they're still thinking Kajol in DDLJ versus Kajol as this character who's supposed to be literally going through hell. There was a missing link. It didn't seem like a web series. It wasn't made for a binging audience. And that was kind of very disappointing. But, you know, they do stop, the series stops at a cliff, and there's definitely a season 2 coming. And I hope they can, you know, go do better character building. Character evolution in season 2, because this one was like, it's like somebody hurried 23, 24 episodes in like 8 and literally didn't cover all angles and dropped very weird dialogues to them and just copy-pasted characters.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you know, they're trying to, I won't even say shrink the whole 24 episodes, because that's a TV show versus they're making a web show out of it. So they're not going to have 24 episodes. They have that budget, cast limitation, whatever. So they're like, people uthate hain, important cheeze uthate hain, important characters uthate hain. Zyada sochte nahi hai, baad mein lagega to dikha denge ki inka affair tha. Ya aisa kuch, like, you know, like everything for them is an afterthought rather than like a thoughtful process. So,
and you know, in the original, there's a lot of lawyering. Every episode has real cases that come in. There's court scenes, there's conjecture of law. And this is what I miss with Indian shows. It just tells you how uneducated they feel the audience is, that they won't get into the nitty-gritties of a lawsuit, for example. This is a law firm and they do everything else except lawyering, literally. I feel sometimes the media of a country really depicts the maturity of its audiences. It's the same with all of the media. For example, you watch Chinese media, you'll see the media talks a lot more about tech. They talk a lot more gaming. They talk a lot more. They deep dive into different industries when they do their shows. To pick up any Chinese show, they will take you through that entire industry. in terms of their characters, and the characters work for a living, so they won't be sitting around in a drawing room in a U circle and talking, literally. You won't see that happen. There's a lot more action happening in professional ends of these characters than, you know, in personal, and their personal lives are intertwined. You watch Korean shows, there's a lot more culture, there's a lot of food, there's a lot of, you know, the cultural elements that people tell you when they tell you a story. And what happens with Indian shows, it's a law show, and there is actually zero lawyering, which...
Like, how do you research for it? Why, what is the need to adapt it to Indian sensibility? Jo chal gaya hai wahan pe to yahan bhi chal jayega. What is the need to...
Kajol ke naam se kya chalega?
Haan, Kajol ke naam se chalega. Aur kya, hume kya kar? So, that's the thought process here, which is... It really shortchanges the viewers, the actors. I feel like everybody gets shortchanged.
And we don't even talk about it. We don't ask them questions in terms of, what the hell? You're doing a lawyer show. Where's the lawyering in the show? What are the cases like? What conjecture of law makes us think that this woman is a brilliant lawyer? Nothing. Yeah. How do you put in a dialogue two episodes later that, oh, you're a good lawyer? You know, you literally, I mean, the way she solved the first case, I was like, duh. Seriously, duh. I mean, you could even think of a better way of presenting her intelligence. Well, there you go, the trial. It's streaming on Disney Plus Hotstar and Hulu for us here in America, and it's called The Trial. Pyar Kanoon Dhoka. Like, go figure. And now we're going to talk about this movie that released on Prime Video last weekend, and it is Varun Dhawan, Janhvi Kapoor's movie. It's called Bawal. Did you watch it?
I was busy in the Barbieheimer.
Barbieheimer caught you and you did not watch it.
No. I've seen their social media promotion and everything, but I didn't get a chance to watch it. But I have heard good things, so I'm actually looking forward to seeing it this week.
All right. Don't.
Why don't you tell me about what you felt about?
Well, let me start with saying, don't watch it. All right. That was my
Really? Because some people told me it was good.
I have to tell you that there is a very big gap in the movie in terms of what the director wanted to show and what really ended up happening to the movie. And I'll tell you why. It's Nitish Tiwari, the guy who made movies like Dangal, and Bawal is supposed to be the story of this couple. There's a guy, he's a middle school teacher in somewhere in Lucknow, and he has this habit of telling everybody that he's great. So he can't see any flaw in his character. He's created this entire persona around him on social media, which tells people that he's great. So he can't seem to have a flaw. He gets married to this girl, and the girl tells him before she marries him, Janhvi Kapoor, she tells him that, hey, I have epilepsy, and sometimes, you know, when I'm stressed out, I get fits. So he's like, oh, that's fine, doesn't matter. She looks good, she presents herself well, she's educated, it fits his lifestyle. It also fits the kind of image that he wants to give out to students and, you know, his school. So he marries her, but the night of the wedding, she gets a fit. And then he gets completely disturbed because he feels that, what if I take her out somewhere or introduce her to people and she gets a fit in front of them, what will happen to my image? So he marries her, yet they don't have a relationship. He completely ill-treats her because of the way he wants to appear in front of other people. Now, there is a local politician and, you know, issues happen with a local politician, his name is Aju, by the way. This guy tries to get suspended because the local politician's son is in the class, and basically they realize that he really doesn't know anything. He's literally faking his way through through the process. And when he's teaching history to the students, he's literally not teaching anything. The students are reading themselves and he's faking the entire thing. So he gets suspended. And now he feels that if I have to really look good and get my job back, I need to show them something. So what he decides is he scams his father of money, tells him, oh, I'll take your daughter for, I have to go for a school trip and I'll take my wife along. And these parents are like, all right, we'll give you all the money that we have in savings. But if you take your wife along and your relationship improves, that'll be a great thing. So they're thinking of it that way. And he tells him, I'm going to travel to locations in Europe that are affected by World War II, and I'm going to live stream and teach my children. And that way he thinks that he'll sound cool to his students and he might get his job back. So so they pay for it, and he decides to leave for Europe. But while in where he tells his wife, you don't really have to come. I did it all for, you know, to save my image, and you really don't have to come with me. But she insists. So they go to they land in Paris. And now, you know, this entire journey starts where he's still that person who's literally even live streaming just for the heck of it so that he can get his students' attention, while she's literally interested in going to the museums, figuring out stuff. And then while this entire process happens, you know, they go, he has to go and sit in the museum in Musée d'Orsay in Paris and listen to an entire performance, and he literally sleeps through the performance. He just can't do it. He mocks people while they're walking. He of course downplays her and tells her to go her own way. But then he starts to understand the process, the Holocaust process. They go to Amsterdam. They go to Anne Frank's house, and then Nisha, which is Janvi Kapoor's character, propels him to think about, okay, if you had only one day to live like she had and got really no resources, what would you do? And then, you know, he starts rethinking his life after going to, you know, different Holocaust sites. And then there's this Bollywood element in between where they start getting close to each other. And they've already reached a stage where they're about divorce anyways. And it's such a lost movie. It goes from one side to another, and then they go to Auschwitz.
I'm like hanging this close, like, you know, while listening to exactly. I don't even know exactly. How you managed to watch
it. How do you take a rom-com and put this entire through to World War II, Auschwitz, you know, they even go to Auschwitz. And literally my eyes were bleeding. I swear to God, I didn't want to watch it anymore, because it's a story of this guy coming off age and realizing that his life is great enough and he doesn't need to, you know, be somebody he's not. But how Nitesh Tiwari ties it back to Holocaust and what happened in World War II with the Nazis, I absolutely found it very appalling, because you literally trivialized that entire process by tying it back to this guy's search for identity. And
this is wrong on so many levels that, like, I'm just listening to you and I'm getting offended on like 1,000 fronts.
You know, it's the dialogues are the worst. There, he makes fun of certain things, and then there's this there is this entire equivalence driven between Hitler and human greed. I swear to God, at that point in time, I felt like throwing stones on the television screen. I swear I did. I just couldn't take it. It's so insensitive to, you know, just going to the concentration camps in Auschwitz, where people suffocated in gas chambers. And it is a shameful depiction of the narrative of literally taking that pain and that entire Holocaust back to this guy's, you know, bringing it back to this guy's story. I don't know what subtext there was. I just think that
he sounds like an insufferable narcissist. And did they just base Holocaust on the coming of age journey of an insufferable narcissist who just finds out that, oh, my life was best anyway?
Yeah, I'm better than those people who suffered through World War II. Literally, that was a story.
But like, what were you suffering before?
You know, imagine creating metaphors out of the suffering of those people and linking it back to, and that it's called Bawal, because he tells Janvi Kapoor's character that, oh, we'll go to Normandy because Normandy beach mein bawal hua tha. People were killed. What do you mean bawal hua tha? I understand that everybody has their own way of equating things, and they have their own way of creating equivalence in their heads about, you know, things that happen in their lives to
world.
There were so many other stories that could have been linked back in the history of the world. Link back to this. Why World War II?
The point is, will they try to do the same thing in Jallianwala Bagh? Like, usko Jallianwala Bagh mein le jaoge, wahan jaake usko ye realize karwaoge ki meri zindagi to achhi hai, ye log to goli kha ke mar gaye the. Like, seriously, like, yahan pe India mein bawal ho jata. Sahi, main batai.
How can you create a story that invalidates the suffering and lives of so many victims of World War II? You put their experience in, you have an equivalence to a guy who's an Instagram junkie. Literally. You draw that equivalence. And the entire tone deafness of this movie and the script. I mean, how...
Yeah, let me get this one thing straight. This guy was a middle school teacher, or was he running like some sort of...
No, like... he's a school teacher. It did not require the equivalence. There is no equivalence between the fact that the guy doesn't understand the suffering of his own life versus World War II and, you know, going to Anne Frank's house and Auschwitz, you know, literally uncalled for. The movie is tone deaf. The movie trivializes the pain and suffering of the victims. And honestly, a movie like this in America would be stoned.
Okay, thank you for...
I'm going to say about Bawal. I've saved a lot of your time. Please do not watch it.
Thank you so much.
And coming from Nitesh Tiwari, I'm sorry, but, you know, sorry, this is stone deaf. Anyways, well, this is it for this week. We ended on a very somber note with Bawal. But this is it for our show this week. We had three movies and a series. And we hope you enjoy our show. Well, please write to us and tell us how you felt. And we'll come back next week again with another episode of Red, White, and Brown. Take care.